I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Today we're going down under, mate, where we'll find Rougarous, which is Australian for beer. And we're going to talk about ghosts, the Haunted Q Station. We're going to talk about investigation techniques. But before we do that, I want to introduce our guest for the evening. Anne Rekovich is with us. She is an investigator and researcher, and I had a great privilege of investigating with her a few years ago at the Q Station. Anne, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my absolute privilege to be here, Dave.
I've got to say, I hate to start off on a bit of a controversial note, but Anne, I was alerted to something today. When I mentioned to our listeners that we were going to be going down under and we'd be talking about Australia and ghosty Australia, I got a very interesting notice from October 14th, 2017 from the Flat Earth Believers page.
Oh, okay.
I'd like for you to answer this because I've been to Australia and I want to know how you guys pulled this off. And I don't want you to hold back. I want to know the truth. It says,
all right,
Australia is not real. It's a hoax made for us to believe that Britain moved over their criminals to someplace. In reality, all these criminals were loaded off the ships into the waters, drowning before they could ever see land again. It's a cover-up for one of the greatest mass murders in history, made by one of the most prominent empires. Australia does not exist. All things you call proof are actually well-fabricated lies and documents made by the leading governments of the world. Your Australian friends, like you, Anne Rekovich, they're all actors. They're computer-generated personas, part of the plot to trick the world. If you think you've been to Australia, you're terribly wrong. The plane pilots are all in on this and have, in all actuality, only flown you to islands close nearby, or in some cases, parts of South America, where they have been cleared space and hired actors to act out as real Australians. Australia is one of the biggest hoaxes ever created, and you have all been tricked. Join the movement today and make it known that they have been deceived. Make it known that this has all just been a cover-up. The things these Australians say to be doing, all these swear words and actions based on alcoholism, MDMA, and bad decisions, are all ways to distract you from the ugly truth that is one of the greatest genocides in history. 162,000 people were said to have been transported to this imaginary land during a mere 80 years, and they were all long dead by now. They never reach that promised land. Tell the truth. Stand up for what's right. Make sure to spread the word Australia is not real. It's a code word for the cold-blooded murder of more than 100,000 people. And that's not okay. We will not accept this. Stand up for the ones who died. Let it be known that Australia does not exist. Please send donations to Flat Earth Believers.
How convenient. Oh, well, look, I'm quite happy to promote that idea if it keeps that person from getting down under. That's all I can say.
Anne, are you nothing but a really good actress who confused and confounded me, taking me to the Q station, which really is just a Wendy's during the rest of the week? But when I'm there, you guys dress it up to look like an old quote-unquote quarantine station?
It's all an illusion, Dave. Absolutely. We drugged you and just put you on a bed with things plugged into your brain to make you think that's where you were.
Wow. And you're really from Minnesota, aren't you? I could tell by the accent.
Yeah, totally natural.
Well, Anne, it is fun to have you here. And that is a real message that was sent to me by one of my listeners. And from the Flat Earthers. You got to love that. I mean, Flat Earthers have already kind of got their uphill battle in front of them. And there are some interesting and intriguing aspects to that whole claim. But now that they're calling Australia fake, I just don't know what to believe. The koalas and the wallabies I petted, they looked so real, Anne. I would have sworn they were real.
The technology that we have, it was actually the Tim Tams that we fed you that gave you the hallucinogenic drugs.
Oh, you know what? That is the one thing I do believe, because you fed me a lot of Tim Tams, which could be the most delicious cookie ever perpetrated through a conspiratorial hoax to convince me that I truly was halfway around the world, when in fact I was really somewhere in between Puerto Rico and Egypt. I'm not sure where, but somewhere in between those two. Silly stuff. And I'm going to see you again soon. We're both going to be at the Australia Para Conference that's taking place this June. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the conference and what's going on?
Sure. It's kicking off on a Friday afternoon, and we've got an investigation Friday night with you and Bill Chappell and a couple of other of our local ghost hunters, Renata Daniel, Beth Luscombe. Beth Darlington. I'll get in trouble for using that wrong name now. And we're doing an investigation through till about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. Then Saturday, we've got guest speakers that are going to be doing their stuff, and I believe you're doing a talk there as well, Dave.
You are correct. I will be on hand. I'll be doing a talk. I know Bill Chappell will be doing a talk. You've got a lot of great speakers lined up. And for those of you that have always wanted to visit the land down under, imaginary or not, we're going, so we can all wake up in some faraway imaginary land together and enjoy Tim Tams. Because I'll tell you what, if Tim Tams are the spoils of being tricked, I'm all about being tricked.
And don't forget your Cadbury Koala Bear chocolates as well.
Oh, yes.
They're pretty good. But I don't know about the Vegemite chocolate. I think you can keep that.
No thanks. Vegemite I'm out on. Tell me, I do have to tell you, Bill Chappell and I had the weirdest experience ever in Australia.
Mm.
All right. And it has nothing to do with the paranormal.
Okay.
We had gone in, I can't, what was the hotel that it was held in? Do you remember?
Oh, up at the Carrington at Katoomba?
Right, the Carrington at Katoomba. And there's a little diner right across the street from there. And we went in to order. We went in to order something, and it was about 10:45 in the morning. And Bill and I looked, and I said, you know, I'd like some scrambled eggs and bacon and toast. And the guy looks at me and goes, sorry, we don't serve scrambled eggs past 10:30, but I can give them to you over easy. And I looked at Bill and I said, very funny. You know, I'd like them scrambled. Yeah, we don't do scrambled eggs after 10:30. I'm like, I'll come back there. Really, all you have to do is put the fork in the same pan you put the over easy and just mix it around a little bit and boom, scrambled eggs. Nope, sorry, we don't do it. They would not make me scrambled eggs. They would make me over easy eggs, poached eggs, but they would not scramble eggs. Is there some kind of weird lunacy that goes on in Australia? Is there fear that you'll upset the drop bears and the chupacabras of your land if you serve me scrambled eggs past 10:30 a.m.?
Well, maybe the flat earth will turn round if we do that.
I wish I was joking. Bill and I laughed ourselves sick about that. I'm like, this is the dumbest rule I've ever heard. It wasn't even like McDonald's. They would still serve me breakfast. They just refused to scramble the eggs past 10:30 in the morning. Well, there's got to be a law somewhere, and we've got to draw that dividing line. So they did, and damn it, I didn't get a chance to get my scrambled eggs while I was in Australia.
They'd washed up their whisk. They couldn't do it again.
Obviously. And that's a lot of work to have to get back into it. That is a beautiful country, and you were kind enough to show us around and take me to see my first Australian animals. That was great. Was it weird to see this big, bad, paranormal guy from the United States come, and he was all jelly for a bunch of wallabies and a koala?
Yeah, it was a little bit. We quite enjoyed it. We stood back and just let you run amok, and yeah. particularly with that big kangaroo that you happened across.
Yes. I was.
Oh boy!
I told everybody. I said, I think I looked like an ADHD 8-year-old boy. I just kept running from animal to animal, and so excited to get to see us. I couldn't believe that some of the animals were just out walking freely amongst us. Mm. That was pretty remarkable. And then, do you remember her giving me a good scare with the koala bear?
Oh yes. The good old drop bear.
Well, no, when I got up there, the koala was on the stick. She goes, "Yeah, if you want to come on up here and pose," and I started to get into pose. She goes, "Now don't get too close because he could bite you in the neck. That's what they do, you know." And I said, "What?" And so, like, the first picture, I've got this kind of panicked look on my face, and then settled in.
We do like to muck with the Americans a little bit.
Yeah, I noticed that. Probably the slowest moving vampiric bear on the planet Earth, but I didn't want to take that chance at first. There is quite a rich history. Now, you know, we've heard, again, American telling of your history, that your land was settled by a bunch of criminals that Britain no longer wanted. How much of that is real?
Well, in actual fact, it is quite true. New South Wales is where they first came in, and I think it was 1788, and established some colonies there. But, I mean, we starting right from scratch. There was nothing there. They had to build it all themselves, and quite a sad history with how some of the convicts were treated. So
they're convicts.
Yeah, we've got convicts here.
Right, I know that, but I mean, why was it sad treatment? They were sent somewhere because they couldn't act normal. They would hurt people and steal and rob and cheat and lie.
Yeah, well, in some cases, it was for stealing a loaf of bread because their family was starving.
Ah, cry me a river, Anne Rekovich.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, and there was also some who deliberately stole a loaf of bread to get transported to Australia to have an opportunity to start fresh, because England was so overcrowded and there was disease and no chance to better themselves, I suppose. So I heard recently that some did it deliberately to get to Australia.
Well, apparently those were not people that enjoyed scrambled eggs past 10:30 in the morning. So it was heavily laden then. And isn't that funny? So we're going to send the worst of the worst. We're going to send the criminal lot over to this land that's rich in gold and diamonds and other natural resources. However, on the other side of things, don't you guys have diamonds in Australia too?
We've got opals.
Opals, that's it. Opals. Yeah, I knew they were gems. What's the difference between a diamond and an opal? Come on. That's what I tried to tell my wife. That's what I tried to tell my wife when I proposed to her with one. Come on, cubic zirconia is just as good as diamonds. But you send them there, and they're, man, literally everything in your country wants to kill you. And I've seen the news stories as we read them here. You've got snakes, spiders, jumping spiders. You've got drop bears, wink, wink. You've got other really weird stuff, though. But you do seem to have a bunch of species that are some of the most venomous in the world, all in one place.
Yeah, we do. Maybe we're trying to keep out those who are just a little bit, you know, weaker of spirit, so to speak.
Like the flat earthers?
They can stay there. Yeah, but the biggest advice I can give for any Americans coming down under is to, if you do see a snake, stand still. Don't run. Don't move. Just let it go on its way. It will slither off.
Wait, did you say a steak or a snake?
Snake.
Okay, snake. I was going to say, if you saw a steak, we see them in Outback all the time up here. And that's authentic Australian cooking, I've been told.
Oh, yes. I was dying to get to an Outback restaurant in America, and I never got there. It would have been hilarious.
It's like bringing people from the old country in Sicily over to Olive Garden. I don't think it's going to be exactly what you were expecting. Right. So if you do encounter a snake, I thought you had very aggressive snakes, though.
We do, but they sense movement. So the idea is if you stand really still, they don't know you're there.
Yeah, we saw how that worked in the old Jurassic Park movies. Not so great all the time.
It's the brown ones you've got to worry about. They will chase you.
Really? What kind of snake is that?
The brown snake. We're very creative with our names here. We've got the red belly black snake, which, guess what?
It's got a red belly and it's a black snake?
You got it.
Wow. I'm kind of quick how I can pick up on those urban cultures like that from faraway lands.
Very impressive.
You've got a lot out there. Now, how about, you know, I shouldn't be nervous, but I am. I went to quarantine station with you guys. It's referred to as Q Station, right?
Yes.
And is that in Manly? Is that where it's located?
Yes, it is located just on the North Head above Manly.
And I have to tell you, that may go down as one of the most beautiful places on planet Earth, which is really kind of ironic when you think about what took place there. I felt like I was on the set of Fantasy Island.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It was sort of the most remote location they could have at the time when they needed to quarantine boats and things that were coming in. And it is, when we go there, we just look at the view and think to ourselves, wow, they looked at this every day, the most beautiful scenery in such a horrible place for them.
Right. So walk us through, what was the quarantine station? And there were multiple quarantine stations around Australia, but this was a big one. And what was going on?
This was the one that lasted the longest. So it kicked off back in about 1828, and they had a convict ship come in, actually, which had some disease on board, so they were quarantined. The idea was to put them in a location where even if they did escape the quarantine station, they couldn't make their way back into the city. It was just too far. Now we've got bridges and things that we can cross to easily get to the city, but back then you'd die before you got there from all those snakes and spiders. So they would quarantine them there for 40 days until they were billed to be clean of health. And then they were allowed back into the city. So this went on from about, as I said, 1828 right through to the, I think it was 1984 that they shut it down.
Really? That was going on until 1984?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So, you know, then it would be like the planes that were coming in or maybe cruise ships and things like that. And then later on you'd have your bird flus and things that were then taken to hospitals and quarantined instead. So it was no longer needed. So they let it go over to the National Parks and Wildlife, and they turned it into a conference centre. But then they began to realise it was too big a site to be able to maintain the buildings. They couldn't get funding to try and look after these buildings, which are such a big part of our history. So then they realised they had to turn to the corporate world or to private buyers to help them keep the history alive there. So that's where they leased it to Moreland, who has Accor Hotels. And it's now a 4.5-star resort. So you actually get to sleep in the actual buildings that the quarantine people slept in.
And it's beautiful, though. It's definitely been cleaned up since it was there, but I was astounded by the history of that location.
Yeah.
And how close they were to being right about so many things, but that being off by just a small fraction actually caused multitudes of death. Kind of talk us through that aspect, because this was really a fascinating aspect of to me with what they were doing to clean the clothes and try to get people prepared for life on the island.
Yeah, so they would, once the ship was quarantined, they would come into the dock there and they'd go through the center to have all their clothing, bags, everything taken away, and they were put through these big steam chambers where they heated the clothing up to a certain temperature. One of the guides told me that they missed out by 1 or 2 degrees to actually kill the diseases that would have been on the clothing. It was enough, though, to ruin all the delicate silks and much of the clothing they had within those cases. From there, they were taken to the shower block where they were put through a carbolic acid wash. So the thought there was...
carbolic acid. Now, what is carbolic acid? It doesn't sound pleasant.
No, it's not. No, it does give you a light burn. So they'd water it down a bit. It wasn't directly pouring acid over you, but there are still cakes of soap around that you can get which has the carbolic acid in it, and it's got a very strong smell to it, which is still in those shower blocks today. So basically you'd get the top couple of layers of skin burnt off you from these showers.
Okay.
Which would then Yeah, I know. Welcome to Australia. No wonder the flat earthers don't want to come. So that
I'm not even sure us round earthers want to come now.
That would expose the new fresh skin to the diseases that were around the place. So they weren't actually getting rid of the illness. They were preparing your body to take on the disease. And the other thing they had was an inhalation shed, and these things are all still there, where they would concoct some sort of fumes for you to inhale to cleanse your lungs of any contamination that may be there.
Sure, makes sense. I could use some of that right now.
Yeah, you could.
Fighting the man flu here, and I don't know what's going to be more deadly, my visit to the non-existent place of Australia or this man flu that I've contracted. But so they'd have you breathe this in. So it was really, they were going through an entire disinfectant. Was that because when they first landed there and they were bringing their disease and everything to this island? Because it was uninhabited at first, right? Well, that's except for correct. The Aboriginal people that
lived there. And as for the Aboriginal land, it's actually quite a sacred location. It's a place where there's a lot of ceremony, teaching. I spoke to an Aboriginal elder who told me it was like their nirvana, their heaven. And, I mean, after staying there, you can see why. It's so beautiful. So I've forgotten what I was talking about, Dave. The koala got me.
Oh, sorry. Well, we were just talking about how they would use the acid to scrub and clean people, and then they were causing them to inhale these fumes to try to clean out their lungs and do all of that. So they were really going from one extreme to another. They were really trying to rid themselves of any kind of disease. Did you say when the people first started landing, were they wiping out the Aboriginal population because of their disease that they were bringing?
I honestly don't know about that aspect of the history. I know that that would have happened in other locations, and very sadly, they killed off a lot of the local tribes as well. But as for Quarantine Station, I'm not sure whether that happened.
All right. So they would go through all of this, and then, like you said, what was really kind of sad was they were boiling the clothes to try to kill the bacteria, but they're actually causing the bacteria to grow and spread even more violently because they were bringing it up close to that level, but it wasn't killing it. It was more of a conducive environment for the bacteria to continue to live.
Yeah. And then after you had all that done to you, depending on the ticket you were given, if it was a first class, second class, third class ticket, you were then put into the accommodation to suit your status. So the first class people had quite nice accommodation with people who would wait on them and cook meals, and then you'd have second class, which was still quite nice. Third class was more the galley-style dining room and slops. But the very sad thing was that if you were of anything but white skin, regardless of the ticket you had, you were put into what they called Asiatics. And essentially that was tents on the side of a hill. And this was because of the White Australia policy, which I believe they only got rid of it in the 50s. So it was dreadful part of Australian history where if you weren't white-skinned, you were deemed to be less than a normal person.
Yeah, we had a part of that in our culture too, I understand.
Yeah. So the Asian people that were coming through were kept in the tents, and they eventually had a building built for them, which they stacked pallet beds on top of each other, like 8 high, so that they could be crammed in because the people in the other buildings were complaining about the smell.
Okay. Yikes. All right, now, how much did they keep a pretty copious list of deaths and how many people died while they were interred there?
Yes, they've got all the death records. I don't think they're complete, but they're pretty good. We do know that at some stage there was some prisoner of war people that came through. I remember one of the guides telling me that there were some Italian prisoners of war, and there's records of them coming onto the site, but nobody knows what happened to them after that.
And the amount of deaths that took place there, do you believe that is why it is so crazy active in that area?
Well, for me personally, I think it's you've come to a new country. with all these new expectations to start a new life. You've come with your family, and then if one of you had disease, you were separated. There was the anguish, there was the heartache, and some of these people died in this new foreign land and never got to see their family again. So it's the heartache, it's the sorrow, it's the loss that I think is why it's still quite active.
Now, talk to me about your experiences. How long have you been investigating at the Q station?
I'm coming up to 5 years there now as the official paranormal investigator there. We've been running what we call the paranormal investigator experience there for 4.5 years. And unlike ghost tours, we don't tell you stories. We take you to a building and say, this is the doctor's quarters. This is the equipment you're going to be using. Go into there and try and collect some evidence of the paranormal for us. And I don't know if there's any other tours that do this anywhere else, but we actually analyse all those recordings for the people every time they come on a tour to see if they've caught any voices. And the amount of recordings and evidence that we get is quite staggering.
Now, personally, what type of experiences have you had there when you've investigated? Have you seen the Holy Grail? Have you seen any apparitions?
I'm a huge skeptic. and I saw my first unexplained phenomena there. I was standing outside of the nurses' quarters on the veranda in broad daylight, looking into the nurses' lounge room. And I saw this column of grey mist go from the side of the room out through the doorway and out into the hallway and then disappeared around the corner. I immediately went into investigation mode, trying to think, what have I just seen? Tried to work it out logically. And there was the only thing I could think of was maybe a plane going overhead that was casting a shadow. There's nothing. There's very little contamination up there to evidence. So there's no people walking past. It's very isolated. So that was a really cool one for me.
It sounds like it'd be pretty cool for everybody to have that kind of experience. Yeah. Now, are there any kind of malevolent spirits that you think walk that area as well?
Look, the guides will tell you that there could be a demon around the place. I used to be told about the demon legs. Yes, his nickname is Legs. And they said he would hang out in this particular bedroom. Interestingly, I had a guy that was being, as we say in Australia, a bit of a dickhead, and he was hiding underneath a bed trying to scare his girlfriend.
That's really quaint urban culture. I'm not quite sure I'm familiar with that comment. Did you say it's dickhead?
Dickhead. Apparently dickhead. He wets his pillow.
Wets his pillow. Oh, that sounds like another regional dialect.
Yeah. So he was hiding underneath his bed, going to grab his girlfriend's leg as she walked past, as you do in Australia. And she was out in the veranda talking to us, had no idea that he was in there waiting for her. And in this particular room, we had the recorder on. We've got a child's voice saying, come play with me.
Ooh. Now, and was it that clear, or was it kind of muddled in hisses and pops?
It wasn't muddled in hisses and pops. It was whispery, but clear enough to hear what it was saying.
Okay. And you get an electronic voice phenomena sample like that. And what is your protocol when you're doing an investigation there? Do you go in to try to communicate with that spirit, see what's going on? And have you ever had a spirit repeat itself, like where you'll go multiple times and you keep catching the same spirit's voice or energy there?
We do. In that particular area, we've come across the name Elizabeth several times. Interestingly, the ghost that's well known there is Annie Egan, according to the guides. We haven't had so much communication with her, but we have with Elizabeth, particularly through the spirit box. And both her and Annie historically came to Q Station as nurses. They contracted one of the diseases pretty quickly and died within a few days of being there. Annie wanted the last rites for a priest, but the head honcho of Q said that they wouldn't allow anyone onto site because they're under quarantine at that stage. So she died not getting the last rites, and they think that she's a restless spirit there. But Elizabeth seems to be communicating with us, which is of interest, as I like to say. The other well-known spirit there is Samuel up at what's known as the Gravedigger's Cottage, which I'm thinking I'm going to put you in that one, Dave, when you come back to Paracon.
The Gravedigger's Cottage. Well, it sounds like a quaint little place.
Sounds friendly.
Yes.
Samuel's well known as being the ghost up there. The guides tell lots of stories about this character Samuel. And one day I was in there with the digital recorder and said, Sam investigates here. And a male voice came across quite clearly as an EVP and said, Samuel. He corrected me.
Ooh. So I shouldn't make the mistake of calling him Sam or Sammy. Samuel is probably the best way to get a response.
Well, if I were you, I'd call him something else and see what you do get.
Oh, no, I don't like to be disrespectful of, but maybe you're right. Maybe I'll get an answer if I'm like, hey, Sammy, are you here? The name is Samuel, right? Then that's maybe when I'm going to get the answer, although that was a horrible Australian accent. there is a lot of activity that takes place, or a lot that people see on a regular basis, which is surprising because, again, it's so beautiful. And it just doesn't... And when we walked around there in the daylight, I thought, there's no way this place is haunted. But when Bill Chappell and I broke out the equipment and we started walking around and getting weird EVP and things happening around us, there was definitely some kind of energy that switches at night. You can feel it there. It's palpable.
Yeah, we do seem to get children's voices quite often. And we had that experience with you guys in the hospital where you had the SLS X-Cam out and you opened up the doors of the cupboard and it was mapping a child figure in there. And interestingly enough, the week before, we had a psychic come in who said to us, there is a child in the cupboard. Her name is Rachel or Rebecca, I think it was. And then to have you guys open up this cupboard door and it mapped in this child figure, that really got me very excited, Dave.
Well, you know me. I sure know how to make the women excited when I ghost hunt.
Yeah, that's right. Show me a little figure in a cupboard any day.
And as somebody I thought was fascinating, too, that you're a skeptic first. When you see something like that and it's mapping in head, shoulders, knees and toes, what is your initial reaction to something like that?
Well, I think at the time we all started to try to interact intelligently with it and say, could you raise your right hand? And sure enough, it raised its right hand. And then we're going, can you wave at us? And it started to wave at us. And my mind is going, there must be some logical explanation for this. Maybe it's just mapping what it thinks is a figure in the cupboard. But to get intelligent interaction is what gets me excited.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. And you start to get that kind of immediate response to it. I love the SLS camera for that mirror effect. That's why EVP has always been my favorite way to investigate, because I like getting that immediate response.
Yeah, I would agree. Digital recorders, a good one. That would be my favorite bit of kit to start off with. And the SLS is interesting, but you've got to be aware of when it's mapping things in as a false reading, like a chair. Or something like that. It puts a figure on it while it's mapping the chair. You just got to use your intelligence. Use your noggin when you're investigating, as I like to say.
With that said, there's been times when we've mapped something in the chair as well, and Bill and I have tried to debunk it, and we're like, I think it's picking up the chair and assuming something is sitting there, and then we get it to interact.
Yeah, look, that happened with my husband as well, Roman. He was at the Gravedigger's
Cottage. Sat him in a chair and he started to react for you?
Finally did as he was told. There was a child-sized figure that at first I thought it was mapping the person sitting on the bed, but the legs were dangling over the edge of the bed and looked like they were swinging back and forth.
All right. So how did your husband start to respond to that? Because I've met Roman, and he again seems like he's not very easily impressed with things. What did he think of that?
Well, he was really impressed with that. It was one of the things he likes to talk about at that location, and he immediately started telling everyone what he was seeing and getting people to come and see it and trying to, if we could, you know, get it to interact again intelligently with us. He thought that was a great bit of evidence that he got there.
We need to take a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss more about the hauntings and the paranormal mysteries and histories of Australia. Right now, before we go to commercial break, it's time for your favorite part of Fridays. It's time to go into the dark hives for Theater of the Mind.
Theater of the Mind, The Eerie Attic, a true story shared by a listener wishing to remain anonymous. It seems so cliche to start by saying, I don't believe in ghosts, but that's where I'm coming from. A few years ago, I moved into a one-bedroom apartment in Melbourne, Australia. It was my first time living on my own. The apartment block had been built in the 1930s. I'd been there for a few months when I came home from work one day and went into the bathroom. I saw something strange. The wooden board covering a hole in the ceiling that led to a small attic space lay broken in two pieces on the ground. I examined the broken pieces. The board was an inch thick, and it would have taken Bruce Lee to break it. I thought the landlord had sent someone to work on the attic. I was frozen stiff with fear. I thought, someone is up there for sure. I emailed pictures to the landlord asking if anyone had been there, with an undertone of annoyance since he hadn't warned me. Her reply read, "Please call me as soon as you're able to." I called, and she explained that her last two tenants had said the same thing happened. She promised to replace the board, and she did. A month later, I woke up one night around 4 a.m. I had so many goosebumps, I felt like someone was rubbing his or her hands all over me. Everything was silent, but then I heard this sound coming from above my bed. It was a dragging sound, like someone pulling a sack of potatoes. I was frozen stiff with fear. I thought, someone is up there for sure. There is no way an animal could make that sound. After 5 minutes, I managed to work up the courage to turn on the light and walk into the bathroom. I was armed with my cricket bat. When I looked, I saw the new board covering the hole had been broken in two. I felt sick. The dragging sound had also stopped. But I heard something else. Whispering. The sound was clear and coming from the attic. It sounded like children's voices, and I could hear one sentence repeated over and over.
It's your turn. It's your turn. It's your turn.
I switched on every light in the apartment to make things feel normal. It was 5 a.m. and dark outside. I watched TV to try to unwind. Then a fuse blew. My pet budgie, Dexter, whom I kept in the kitchen, usually never made a sound at night. But he started squawking like he was being strangled. I'd never heard him make those sorts of noises. He was screaming. I grabbed my car keys, ran out, sat in my car, and waited there until the sun came up. When I saw people walking their dogs, this comforted me enough to go back inside. The front door was propped open, but I thought I hadn't closed it when I'd run out. I went to the kitchen to check on Dexter, and he wasn't in his cage. I felt sick again. All my windows were closed, so I looked everywhere inside. When I walked to the bathroom, I heard splashing. Dexter was half drowned in the toilet. I took him out, washed him, and dried him. I was so confused. At 8 a.m., I called the landlord and gave her a watered-down version of the night. "Oh, wow. You heard the whispering, too?" she said. I stayed in that apartment for another 18 months. I heard the whispering on a few occasions, and twice, the board covering the hole in the ceiling moved. Although I live elsewhere, the landlord recently called. She said that her new tenants had begged to speak with me about some of the stuff that's going on there now. Forget it. It's their problem now.
Beyond the darkness,
welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Ann Rekovich, our guest this evening, as we're talking about the spirit world down under. Boy, that's a horrible accent. I gotta work on that while I'm out there. I want you guys just to, like, create different things for me to learn how to say with an Australian accent, so I don't sound like a Minnesotan trying to talk with an Australian accent.
Yeah, I think it's one of the hardest accents to actually nail.
Yeah,
to get that sort of sound happening there, the nasal.
I always thought it was funny watching Mel Gibson movies because he got so good at doing an American accent, except when he swears. If you ever watch any of the movies, he can ground it out like this, and he'll sound tough and hard, and then it's son of a bitch. You'll hear that slip out, or well, fuck you.
Yeah.
You hear the and you're like, well, Mel, what's going on? Hold that accent. I guess the swear words are just too powerful to hold back. And it's great chatting with you, and I can't wait to see you again. This is going to take place. We're going to be out at the Australia Paracon. That'll be taking place in June of this year, and you can get information by going to darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com, and scroll down until you see the little banner for the Australia Paracon. Click on it. It'll take you in, show you can get tickets and sign up to be a part of it. I'm going to be out there. Bill Chappell will be out there. Dan McMath is going to be on hand. Gemma Reagan is going to be there. Greg Doyle. Karen Ronkowski, who I love. And it's funny, I've got to go all the way to Australia to see her. She's an American girl, but I get a chance to see her. Carrie Nelson, the psychic medium, will be on hand. There's so many other great names, and you guys can join us. Come on down.
And
have a great time. Yeah, you're going to be there.
I'm a guest speaker. Yeah, I'm a guest speaker now as well.
Wow, they'll let anybody do that now?
I know. I'm just scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I feel so much less important now, Ann. No, I'm kidding. So we're going to go back out there. You get to hear great talks and interactive conversations with different people involved in the paranormal, from the psychic realm to the skeptical world to the equipment realm of Bill Chappell. So you can come out and see it and hear it all and be a part of it. Plus, you get a chance to investigate Q Station in Manly, and it's beautiful. You got to come out for that just alone. That is well worth the price of admission. But you were telling me about a place you want to stick me. And that sounds horrible if you just joined the program. A place you want to stick me when we go out there to the Q Station. And what is the name of it again?
It's the Gravedigger's Cottage. And, you know, we like to try and give our American friends the best experience we possibly can. So I'm thinking of sticking Bill down into the shower block and you into the Gravedigger's Cottage. We've had many, many interesting experiences there. There was one not long ago where they had a tour group going through, and it was kids. It was a teenager's birthday party, and they were running through the place screaming and carrying on, and the tour guide that was trying to look after them was sort of losing control. So we went in to sort of back her up and help move all these kids out, and as they went screaming and running and jumping over balconies, I was standing in the kitchen. Another investigator was standing in a doorway, and between us there was against the wall, a stove with aluminium pots on it. Sorry, aluminium, for those who don't know what aluminium is.
I like your version much better. It sounds a whole lot classier. What is that made out of? Aluminium. Ooh, very fancy.
So that, as this kid went screaming past, jumped over the balcony, one of the pots, the lid off the pot, flew up into the air and out into the other room, in between this other investigator and myself. We saw it happen. Now, there is a bit of give in the floor there, but not enough to make a pot lid fly up and across.
Are you sure?
I am positive.
Are you sure Roman wasn't on the other side of the wall with one of those Acme magnets from the old Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote cartoons? Just because I know your husband. No. I think he'd try to pull that off if he could.
No, that's not what he tries to pull off. But
oh, jeez. It's a family show. No,
look, the Australians have a very dry sense of humour, and we're a little bit smutty, so please forgive us.
No, that's part of the allure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a video online as well of a film crew that was there filming, and as I was standing there talking, you see this woman all of a sudden get dragged backwards into the second bedroom of the Gravedigger's Cottage.
What?
And you can actually, you can see the coat, the collar go up, and she just falls backwards into this room. That was quite distressing for the lady involved. Of course, just out of camera shot, you can't actually see what is grabbing the collar. It's always the way. Why has it always happened that way?
Because ghosts know, they know all the angles. That, so wait a minute. So some girl got knocked down and dragged?
She got grabbed by the collar and pulled into this second bedroom.
I'm not really building a lot of confidence to go ghost hunting with me, am I? Wait, what do you mean? Somebody's getting dragged? Suddenly I turn into Woody Allen.
And we actually had Chip Coffee there investigating as well. And while he was sitting around the table and they were doing a bit of filming, one of the cameramen once again had his back to that door and he said that somebody grabbed him. And he freaked out and refused to go back to film there. So I had to stand with my back across the doorway so he could stand in front of me to film Chip.
Couldn't Chip tell where the ghosts were and where it'd be safest to be?
No, he was at the table. He was fine. He was away from it all. That's probably why he knew where to sit.
Obviously. Wow, so it is quite active. Any other fun little stories I need to know about?
Yeah, the one of the guests actually saw a full-bodied apparition there last time we were there. He opened up the back door. Slammed it shut and staggered backwards and ran out of the house. And we said to him, what's going on? And he said there was a man standing at the back door. Of course, we head out there to try and find who's at the back door. No one there. No one at all. We've had some interesting table tipping in there as well.
Now talk to me about that table tipping. And you love this stuff. I had, you know, you watch it on Most Haunted and it is so fakey looking. And then we went to...
Ireland.
I want to say was it in Ireland that's where it took place? You were on that trip, right?
I was, yes.
And were you in the room when the table was dancing and prancing all over the place?
Yeah.
Tell people about that.
So it's an old Victorian style of spirit communication where you'd sit around a table, place your fingers lightly on it, as if you're about to start playing piano. Then you invite spirit to come into the room and communicate with you by moving the table, tipping the table, turning the table. And then you can actually communicate intelligently by asking questions. If you say to the table, can you show me your movement for yes? Show me your movement for no. And then you can start to ask questions. Also, you can get the alphabet if you want to tap out the alphabet and you get the table to rock through. So it will go rock, 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 like A, B, C. And when it gets to the letter it wants, it will stop on it. And so you can slowly, a bit like a Ouija board, start to spell out names. But then, of course, you don't have the demon possessions of Ouija boards if you're using a table. It's much safer.
Right.
Don't even get me started. I've been sitting in a circle now for around about 4 years working on table tipping and development of it. The small group I've got together now, a bit like the Skoll experiments. We've been working on this for a while and only just recently got a levitation.
You sound so calm about it. We just recently got a levitation. Wasn't that remarkable for you to see something like that happen?
Oh, yeah. We were all squealing with delight. I don't know what the neighbors thought were going on. There was lots of squealing and laughing and giggling as it came. It probably only came off the floor about 3 inches, did a figure eight in the air and came back down. Now, we do work in low lighting. Supposedly that's what happens with the spiritualist age. It's all supposed to be done in the dark, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But we trust the people that we work with. We know that there is nobody there that is going to do that. And let's face it, we would have faked a levitation well before 4 years if we were going to do it.
That is true. So you've got the levitation taking place. You've got a lot of different activity. And, yeah, I'm curious, when you do that, I mean, where did they get the idea of getting the spirits to tip the table? You know, that's just a strange aspect of it. You know, I guess it's because they would usually use, like, a three-pronged table, correct? So there'd
that's
be a little
true.
Bit of
that's
wobble to it.
Yeah, my tables are pretty secure, but they generally are three-legged tables, and there's the whole sort of the idiomatic that it's just these small motor movements of us that is doing it. And look, in all honesty, we don't know exactly what's going on. We're fascinated every week when stuff is happening. And we're at the stage now we've actually got those office wheelie chairs that we we all sit around because the table is sliding across the floor so much and doing so many things. It's the only way we can keep up.
All right. Now, I want to know, too, weird. And I'm sorry, I'm muting my microphone because I'm fighting man flu here, and I keep going through coughing jags, so I apologize for the awkward pauses there, Anne.
That's okay. I'm trying to keep talking.
No, you're doing great. Talk to me. Okay, so the Q station is pretty popular and very active. What are some of your other favorite places in Australia?
Look, Maitland Jail, I would have to say. That's just like 30 minutes north of where I am. I saw my first full body apparition there only a few months ago. And when I say full bodied, it was like a regular person walking in front of me. And my mind is still having seizures over that. We had a tour group there. We were helping out Renata Daniel from Newcastle Ghost Tours. She runs tours there regularly. We help out so that we get to get into locations and play around. So I had my tour group behind me, and Roman, my husband, had another group that was coming up through a different wing, and we had three investigators from Shh Paranormal who were setting up their little experiment in C Wing, it was. So I've come around in the dark, and I saw a person walking in front of me, and I thought, now, they don't have a torch. That's really dangerous. And I thought, they don't look familiar to anyone on the tour. That's really odd. I was about to call out to them, just wanted to turn to make sure my tour group came around the corner. They came around. I turned back, and they'd gone. They'd disappeared. Then not long after, my husband came around the other corner. So this was a dead end, and there was no one in between. So I run into the building in C block and asked the group there and said, were any of you just outside? And they're like, no, we've been in here the whole time setting up. And the description of the man was a man who looked around about 5'6" in height. He had a bomber jacket, leather jacket on, balding on the head with a rat's tail down the back, and what looked like beige cargo pants. But I didn't see really past these knees, logically my brain wasn't looking that. And it wasn't that far in front of me. It was like 12 feet in front of me. Nobody on the tour, the locked-in jail, matched the description of the person that I saw. So my mind was officially blown. And there's a video of me online somewhere where I cross live, and you can hear it in my voice, you know, that when they get that excited shake to their voice, and it was there.
Well, and be careful when you Google Anne Rekovich for videos.
Yes.
Because I forgot to mention during the whole opening of the show, of the show, that you really are an actress. You've starred in, let's talk about some of your more high-profile roles. You were on a couple of criminal investigation TV shows, right?
Yeah, Deadly Women. I've been on Deadly Women, I think 7 times as the murderer. Apparently, my face says murderer.
They look at you and they think, "We got to get Anne on the line. We need a good murderer. She's going to fit the bill just right." So they bring you. So you've been on. What's the name of the series?
Deadly Women.
Deadly Women. And do you remember which episode numbers you're in, if people are interested in checking it out?
I don't know the episode numbers, but I know the characters. One of them was Susan Eubanks, who murdered her children to make her husband feel bad. Lovely lady. Irene Maslin was an Australian character. Virginia Andrews.
I need to ask here in the United States, some of the people that would portray killers and murderers in these reality docudramas where they would do reenactments, and especially on America's Most Wanted, they're like, "We're looking for Anne Rekovich, and if you've seen her, call now." And they have some actress portraying her, and then the actress, somebody sees the actress and calls the cops on her because that's what they think. Have you ever had anybody be like, "I just saw that killer. She's right down the street from here."
No, I have been recognized sometimes on the quarantine station ghost tours, and it's quite funny because they look at me really funny, and I'm going, "What's wrong?" They go, "We know you." I said, yeah. And they're going, "You're on that show where they murder people." I'm going, "Oh, yeah, Deadly Women." They're going, we're not going to be in the dark with you.
Now tell them that's a nice little lie to tell the tourists. Now tell everybody the truth. Why do most people recognize you from your acting stint?
Now I'm worried. It was the time in a beer ad that I did play a giant vagina puppet.
And yes, it's true. She showed us the video.
Yep.
So that is that an Australian beer commercial? They are very open down there.
Yeah, Baron Beer, it's called. And the sad thing was I was actually cast directly from my photo. I didn't even need to audition.
That's horrible. You know what? She looks exactly like a vagina. Bring her in. And that's
my
not...
my agent loves it because if they ever have a description comes in that says fat, frumpy, westy, unattractive, she just puts me in like that.
That's not you at all. You are very sweet and elegant. I don't think that's the way they're looking for you. But you play the characters really well, so they're losing you in that. And anybody without makeup on for the killer roles can look like that. And listen, not everybody can pull off a vagina like you. And I've seen the film footage to prove it.
It's impressive. And I got bindies in my feet.
Nice. All right. We'll get back to the paranormal aspect of this, I promise. Just a lot of fun. You're a hoot to chat with. Are you going to try to join us this year for Romania?
I am, yes. And excellent. We might have a little Australian contingent that might be coming if there's enough spots.
Spots. We'll make sure it happens. I hope that you'll come back and bring Roman this time. We'll have a little fun. That'd be great. Yeah, we're going to hit Romania in September. So we're going to go on the Dracula Stakeout is the name of our new event. And we're going to be doing much like our Romania trip 5 and 6 years ago, but we've changed about 40% to 50% of the trip. But you still get to see all of the main castles associated with Vlad the Impaler and Dracula. And you get to see a lot of the great historic spots, including his final resting place. But there's the Baisu Forest, the Haunted Forest will start our journey and more mixed in throughout the trip. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And people can find information. That's going to be going up on our website in the next 7 days at darknessevents.com. But in the meantime, come on out and join me in June when I go down to the Q station in Manly and get a chance to investigate and do some talks. I'm looking forward to that. So you were talking about this jail that what's the name of it again?
Maitland Jail, so Maitland. M-A-I-T-L-A-N-D. So it's not far from Sydney. It's probably about 2.5 hour drive. And that's a fantastic spot. One of the other locations that I've been to recently was Arradale Asylum, which is in Melbourne. And that place is huge. They also had a ward called J Ward there. Yeah, it didn't get a lot of activity, so to speak, but just the history and the way that people were kept, it just blew my mind. Also was in Tasmania recently. A shout out to Tasmania's Most Haunted down there. They took us into, what was the name of that one? It was another asylum, but it was for the nicer people, the ladies who...
For the nicer crazy people?
Yeah, okay. Apparently if you divorced, then you were put into places like that.
So that's how Roman keeps you in check.
Willow Court, that was the name of it, Willow Court Asylum.
Willow Court.
He threatens me, you'll go there if you don't behave. I would have been there years ago, I've been misbehaving for years.
Tell him not to threaten you with a good time.
And look, there's some really good spots. I'm hoping to get to Adelaide as well. They've got there's Adelaide Jail, Z Ward for the criminally insane. That's all run by Alison from Haunted Horizon. She's won a lot of awards for her work. She's been doing a fantastic job promoting the paranormal community. She'll probably be at Paracon there as well. What else has there been? Parramatta Jail. That one's run.
Parramatta Jail?
Yeah, Parramatta.
Okay. Parramatta? Okay.
Yeah. And I think you met Pete at the last Paracon. She runs a lot of tours. Yeah, she does a really great one there. And Berrima Courthouse. I had a great experience with the SP7 mini portal there. I don't know if people know that the mini portal is basically designed just to get rid of the sound coming through the SB7. We had the website called Trove, where all newspapers are scanned and you can search for information there. So one of the Appy investigators, Jackie, had pulled up a story about Berrima Courthouse and Berrima Jail. And she was asking questions to the portal, and the portal started to give first names, last names, how he was killed, and it was matching what was in the article. It was the most
mind-blowing
experience. Even to the point that she said, and how did you die? And it said sapling. And we looked it up, and it actually said that the prisoner had broken off a branch from a tree and bashed the warden with it. And then she said, oh, what, did you get hit in the back of the head? And it went side. And then she read further down through the article, and it said it had been hit in the side of the head.
Well, you can't get any you can't get any more direct than that kind of message.
Yeah, and it's not a huge location, but it's fantastic.
Now, are there creatures that are, you know, known? We've mentioned the drop bear a few times, which of course is just a fun little tourist scare snipe kind of creature. But are there elementals or nature creatures that are known in Australia that we might not find in other parts of the world?
Look, I'm not that experienced in that area. I know that the Caldies, Attila Caldy, is very much into the Yowies and Bigfoots and that sort of thing. I did investigate a location which we can't reveal up in in the Blue Mountains, where they said there was an elemental spirit of some kind or other in there, and I did see how Attila reacted to that spirit, and he actually broke his hand that night punching it into the ground. I've seen footage of Attila not behaving like himself at all. He became very aggressive. And if anyone knows him, he's the most gentle soul on this earth. And to see someone affected like that was quite distressing. Also had a great experience at the same location where I had Jackie, again from Appy, where we were singing in the chapel that was there, and she was singing some Celtic songs, and we had another voice weave in doing a harmony or a counter melody around her, and we stopped and I said, oh, was any of you singing apart from Jackie? And there was nobody, Jackie, singing, but there was definitely this other voice, very ethereal, weaving through her beautiful song she was doing.
That's great. I'd love to hear this, and I know you're going to be sharing a lot of the evidence and different stories when you're doing your talk at the Australia Paracon as well.
Yeah, I hope so. Of course, you know what it's like with recordings and things. If sometimes without listening in headphones, it's difficult to hear.
Right.
And I hate manipulating the
right, where you get it all scrubbed and it sounds like mechanical voices. Yeah, it doesn't sound anything like a human voice. Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, I know quite a few people that overdo their processing on EVP, and it gets to a point where. Yeah, it sounds like you're haunted by the robot ghost of Bender from Futurama.
Who's speaking underwater?
Exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, exactly. Uh-huh. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm going to have to test out the sound system there to make sure that it's worthy of putting the sounds up, because I don't want to put anything up and then people go, "Oh, that was shit." Sorry, poop.
So we already dropped the F-bomb, though. The top is off the Pandora's box now, so we're good. The fact that there's all of this great activity that takes place here, and I hate, doesn't that feel weird to say, boy, there's a lot of great activity? That just means there's a lot of dead people that haven't crossed over. So it's actually pretty sad, but there's a lot there for people that are interested. And how is the culture in Australia regarding the paranormal? You know, different parts of Europe, they're very standoffish. You remember when we were in Ireland, they were kind of scoffing at the idea of the paranormal. Yet there was ghost tours in every town. And
and a museum to the leprechauns.
Right, yeah. Which you got to love.
I don't
you go to
leprechauns.
You go to Ireland, they don't believe in leprechauns, and everything in there is from America. Lucky Charms boxes and Darby O'Gill and the Little People, and they credit Walt Disney with creating leprechauns. I don't think a lot of people realize that, but, you know, what is the culture like there? Is it pretty open and accepting of the supernatural and paranormal, or is that just getting better now?
It's only starting to get a bit better now. I think that we've got a really good paranormal community at the moment. I was only saying to someone the other day, because we had a bit of a New Year's Eve party here, gathered up all the paranormal investigators who had nowhere to go on New Year's Eve. You know, we're the odd ones. And we were just saying how quiet the community is at the moment, and there's no nastiness and no bitching going on. And more doorways seem to be opening up for us. I don't think that people realise that when they start to carry on, that it reflects on the whole community and does damage to everyone, even those who are trying to do it respectfully and you know, and teach rather than going with shenanigans. Yeah.
Now, do you guys have a lot of experiences with? I've got to guess, because there are so many parts of your country that are remote and desolate. Do you have a lot of UFO activity that takes place over Australia?
Apparently, yes. Don Mears is the one to speak to about that. He did a documentary called Australian with Alien Skies, and he had some guests with some footage, interesting stories. I've had friends tell me that just down at the beach down here that they had a UFO come and hover above them and then take off. I have my own UFO story, which I didn't realize was a UFO story until years later.
Please deposit $2.99 more to hear Anne's UFO story. All right, Anne, go ahead. Tell us about your UFO experience. And how did you it was a UFO?
Because I wasn't into this stuff then. And I used to teach singing, and I had a student, Jaya Frasca, who ended up going to London, and I always promised I'd go and see him on the Broadway when he, not Broadway, West End, when he got his big role. Well, he did. So I flew over to London to see him. As I was flying over, it was around 2 a.m. in the morning. All the lights came on in the plane, and this emergency voice started saying, "Warning, warning, breach in cabin pressure. We are dropping to a lower altitude. Warning, warning. The oxygen mask dropped down." It was terrifying. Then the captain got on and said, "Look, we don't know what's happening. There's some sort of fault, and we don't know what it is." And he got cut off with the emergency, descending. So eventually we landed, and they repacked the oxygen masks back up, and we flew into London and arrived hours late.
Wait a minute. They kept you on the same plane?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. You are tough country people, because there's no way you would have put me back on the same plane. No way.
Nothing that a bit of spec fill won't fix.
Yeah, right. So, wait, how does this tie into UFOs?
Okay. When I got to the motel room, I went to take off my shirt to get into my pajamas.
Hey, and now, come on. This is a family show. Would you knock it off?
I'll leave out the raunchy details.
Thank you.
I was with my father. So, yeah. My T-shirt was stuck to my belly. And when I sort of looked in the mirror, there was a patch of blood on my shirt. And I couldn't get the shirt off. I had actually wet it down to unbind it. And when I lifted up to look at my stomach, there was a quarter-inch round hole into my abdomen. Now, I would think that if I got punctured in some way or other,
right,
that I would remember that. I don't remember being hurt or pinched or punched or anything like that. And because I didn't think of any of this sort of stuff, I didn't connect it together until years later when I was at a conference when someone was talking about their experience. And I went, oh, maybe I was abducted by aliens and they were experimenting on me. Then it's become the running joke, because I'm also adopted. So I'm a foundling. I've been trying to get my Mulder, where are you? I've been trying to get my DNA test done.
Uh-huh.
You know, you do it through those places where they do all that.
All right.
I'm on to my eighth attempt, number eight, and they still cannot trace my DNA.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yep. How does that all add up?
How does your husband feel about that?
Oh, we've got two children. Ooh.
Has he tested his DNA yet to see if there's been any alteration from the alien virus to him?
Yeah, well, actually, I just bought him one of the kits, so yes, we're going to test him.
All right, we're about to find out. Holy gosh, you might be the new repopulation of your alien species. And wouldn't it be great when they finally come down here and they're like, what have you been doing, Anne? And then they see the running vagina beer commercial and they're like, oh, God, planet Earth ruins them all.
You forgot to leave me the handbook.
Great times.
So, yeah, I think it's just a funny little story that if you put all that together, I don't know whether I was abducted by aliens or not, but it's a good story.
Well, I think you should definitely go in and get like a regression done. Have you ever considered that?
Yeah, they did try to hypnotize me once as a child because they thought I had ADHD, and they actually couldn't hypnotize me.
Because you had ADHD?
Yeah, probably.
Right.
I was bouncing off the wall.
Your mind was moving too quick. That's fascinating. Maybe.
Ah, too many red jelly beans.
Well, we've got to. I'm sorry, I'm coughing again. I am laughing, and that's what starts me off coughing again. And you're trying to kill me slowly. And,
my bad, sorry.
It's such a pleasure chatting with you, Anne. I can't wait to see you and hang out in Australia this June. And tickets are available for that event. Go to darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. And you'll be able to find all the links there for all the events that I'm going to be a part of this year. We'll be adding more as the year progresses, so continue to check that out. And remember, I'm hosting Coast to Coast AM tonight and tomorrow night. So if you want more of the strange and unusual, make sure you check out coasttocoastam.com and then find the stations button. Find what station in your city, state, and area that plays Coast to Coast AM. You can also stream it directly from knsiradio.com. That's knsiradio.com. And you'll be able to stream the shows live from there. That's our home base in St. Cloud, Minnesota, whenever I host Coast to Coast AM. Well, that's it for this evening. We'll be back again with you next week with more of the fun and the phantoms of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.
America's social casino. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.